Saudi Arabia is planning for a future in which fossil fuel isn't as big a thing. What about ExxonMobil? From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. ExxonMobil investors will vote tomorrow on whether to formally demand that the oil company produce a meaningful climate risk plan. Exxon leadership does support the U.S. staying in the Paris Agreement to cut carbon emissions, but critics say the company underplays the effect of CO2 emissions. Marketplace's Annie Baxter has more.
The state of New York's pension fund has around $1 billion invested in ExxonMobil. Patrick Doherty is director of corporate governance for the controller's office, which manages the fund. He says Exxon hasn't been clear about the risks the Paris Agreement poses to its business. Nearly 200 countries have signed on, and their carbon pollution goals could restrict Exxon's emissions or where it can drill for oil.
These restrictions may be quite serious and significant and require companies to significantly change their current mode of operations.
Critics charge Exxon has invested too heavily in oil and not enough in renewable energy. Shanna Cleveland is with the climate change nonprofit Ceres. She says shareholders recently pushed for and got two other energy companies to promise climate change reports.
We're seeing a big shift in the way that major money managers are thinking about the issue.
Exxon wants shareholders to reject the proposal, saying it's adequately assessed climate change risk. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
ExxonMobil shares are up 0.7% in pre-market trading right now. Let's do some other numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.4% now. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down 1 point for the NASDAQ future, down 17 points, or less than 0.1% for the Dow future. The interest rate benchmark in the U.S., the 10-year Treasury yield, is down at 2.23%. 1MDB, an investment bank based in Malaysia, is at the center of a money laundering scandal that has touched at least six countries. Now, Singapore has fined two banks in connection with this. The BBC's Mariko Oi has more from Singapore.
It's Malaysia's sovereign wealth fund, set up in 2009 by the country's prime minister. It was meant to turn Kuala Lumpur, the capital, into a financial hub, but instead it started to get a lot of negative attention when the Wall Street Journal reported 4 years ago that some $700 million were transferred from the 1MDB to the personal bank account of the prime minister. He denies any wrongdoing, but that triggered investigations in at least half a dozen countries, including Singapore. And it so far shut down two Swiss-based private banks, imposed financial penalties of over $20 million, and this morning announced fines on Credit Suisse and UOB.
BBC reporter Mariko Oi filed that for us from Singapore. Hi, David Brancaccio, stepping out of my anchorman role for a second. It is the final week of fundraising before our books close for the year. We're asking you to step up and help support us today so that we can continue the in-depth, independent economic coverage and innovation coverage and business coverage that you rely on. Any amount, even a small donation each month, really does count. We appreciate your support. Give today at marketplace.org/donate. Now let's turn our attention to what is called co-retailing. This is not quite selling on consignment. Brands use retail stores as a space to sell merchandise, but the stores don't buy the goods up front. Real stores are looking for new roles amid all the online competition. Sally Herships, check this out.
Soho is full of mysteries, like blanket or unusually large scarf.
What is that?
This is a giant blanket. It is made.
Allie Kriegsman is a co-founder of Bulletin, a co-retail space in Soho. It looks like your typical fancy boutique: white shelves, candles, jewelry, tiny ceramic bud vases in neutral colors, and an unusual wall which Kriegsman and co-founder Alana Branston installed at the back.
Alana, how tall is the fur wall?
Across from the dressing rooms is a wall covered in milky white fake fur. Great for selfies. But the designers who pay Bulletin up to $2,000 a month, depending on the kind of space they rent, don't just want to be Instagrammed. They also want to sell.
It has antibacterial coating. It dries very quickly. So it's this fashionable shower cap that almost looks like a cool turban that you could wear out on the street with no judgment. Actually, people would think you look really awesome.
But if you're a new designer, it can be hard to persuade big retailers like Barney's and Bloomingdale's to take a chance.
You can't just be like, you know, oh, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try this chain. I'm just going to put it out there. We'll see what happens. It's not like that.
Designers like Emiko Shinazaki say co-retailing offers freedom and creativity. She's at Bulletin today dropping off delicate honeycomb-shaped earrings.
I like being able to do art. I'm not in the business just to manufacture.
But co-retailers are still brick-and-mortar stores, which need customers. Robbie Dar is director of Yale's Center for Customer Insights. He says even when co-retailers offer events with free rosé, it can be tough to compete with the convenience of online shopping.
It's like having a little, you know, store within my home, and that's really hard to compete with.
Also tough, using the fancy address a co-retail space provides to try to impress a national chain, retail consultant Shama Maher.
They know that there are these co-retailing spaces, and they know that it costs money to be a part of them.
Department stores buy goods, but co-retailers pay to display their goods.
Everybody pays to play.
Back in Soho, handbag designer Mia Wright-Ross is delivering samples to Finer Fields, another co-retail service.
The bigger luxury brands pay to pay in marketing. Like, I get it. So I paid to be in the store because people like you don't come seeing people like me.
She's talking about big national buyers. But for now, Wright-Ross says getting seen by customers is what she's after. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And up for auction in a rural part of Southern California's San Bernardino County the week after next, Molly Corp is looking for bidders on the only rare earth mine in the United States of America. Precious metals are required for just about any piece of electronics gear, including strategically important things for the U.S. military, yet the mine is bankrupt. The Financial Times reports bidders will include a Chinese rare earths firm, some U.S. hedge funds, and a former nursing home operator allied with a private equity firm based in Switzerland. Neodymium, praseodymium, dysprosium, condominium, opium. Three of those five are found inside that mine to be sold to the highest bidder June 14th. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.